Well, good evening, good weekend to you. This is David Mann with Sooner Politics. You're watching Weekend Report. We're glad to have you with us here this cold winter month of January 2019. Hope things are going well for you. Let's get right into the news this week. We've got a lot going on here. How about this one? El Reno, Oklahoma defies state law. That's right. The quiet little town west of the Oklahoma City metro area, El Reno, decided they don't like not having control over those potheads with their dispensaries coming in. Reefer Madness gonna take over the county seat. We gotta do something here. We're losing the culture. No, El Reno, chill please, just chill. Okay, so you've got a few dispensaries providing medicine that, because of our federal government and their backwards ways and crazy politics, wouldn't even allow proper medical research to be done on cannabis medicine. But Oklahoma and our people, along with about two-thirds of the rest of the states, have already said, forget you, federal government. We got people sick. We got people suffering. We got people in pain. We got people that need this medicine. So we made it available, okay? Okay, that battle's done. That was last year's battle. Some are wanting to do over. Last week, we talked about how Casey Murdoch, out there in the Panhandle Senate District, is wanting to do over. He wants to have these votes all over again with a county option where each county can decide whether or not their patients, their suffering, their hurting people are going to be able to get treatment by this medicine under their doctor's care. Mind you, under their doctor's care. But no, El Reno decided to believe a different narrative. El Reno decided to put in a special zoning requirement specifically for medical marijuana dispensaries. Okay, this doesn't apply to the drugstore right across the street that is giving out synthetic marijuana. It's called Marinol. Take a look at it. In fact, I wrote a pretty good article on this in Sooner Politics this week. You can pull it up, soonerpolitics.org. So the drugstore right across the street is selling synthetic Marinol. It's horrible stuff. Doesn't have nearly the nutritional value. Doesn't have nearly the cannabinoids that can actually enhance the different organs of the body that are cannabinoid receptors. No. Doesn't matter that the drugstore right across the street is prescribing and handing out, not prescribing, filling prescriptions for methamphetamines, also known as Ritalin, and other classes of methamphetamines to people. Far more dangerous. It doesn't matter that the pharmacy right across the street is shelling out opiates to people, addicted, and they know they're addicted. Doesn't matter, okay? We got a problem with this herbal medicine called cannabis. And it's got the town in a tizzy. So they made an extra rule, even though Rule F of State Question 788 says that no municipality may take any additional efforts to zone out in their communities any of the medical marijuana retail dispensaries. So they said, well, not 1,000 feet from a school. Now it's got to be also 300 feet from a church. Now, mind you, in the next block over, we're down in the heart of downtown El Reno. Downtown. Now, another block over, there happens to be a Methodist church. And if you were to measure as the crow flies, not as a pedestrian walks, mind you, but as a crow flies, If you can measure directly across, going right through the brick walls of a funeral home between them, you would end up with just short of 300 feet between the back wall of the dispensary. There's not a public entrance in the back here. This is a back alley, okay? So they're just under the 300 feet. Now, other zoning rules often say from the church building, because, you know, we got to protect our churches, don't you know? You're going to lose your faith if there's a medical marijuana dispensary, evidently. I'm sorry, I'm being sarcastic here because it just ticks me off. So you've got this measurement from the church property. Normally they would measure how a pedestrian would lawfully go to the primary entrance, which is all the way around a city block and in the middle of the block. And there's where this local dispensary opened up. Now, mind you, this is not some, you know, hippie caravan came in on a, you know, daisy-colored, painted bus, graffiti-covered bus. This is a young family, lifelong residents of El Reno, okay? They want to provide this medicine to the veterans suffering with PTSD. Their families aren't even getting a decent night's sleep because of the flashbacks. We've got people with cancer treatment. The nausea from the chemotherapy is so bad, they can't keep food down. They're losing weight like crazy, and yet they're trying to fight advanced stage cancer. We've got, you know, people that are dealing with children with epilepsy, children with seizures, children with birth defects. You know, you've got grandma with her advanced arthritis. The joint pain is so bad, and the opiates aren't working anymore. And plus, she's about to kill herself from getting stronger and stronger opiates until the doctor said no more. And now our federal government says, we're cutting you off cold turkey. No, no, the city fathers of El Reno now want to say, this cannabis dispensary, which is lawfully licensed, properly licensed, paid thousands of dollars to the state for their licensing, complied with the OSBN, DD, they complied with the state health department, they got all their ducks in a row. El Reno, you're about to get sued. I talked to attorney Ron Durbin today. He said he's going to play nice with you once. He's going to send you a letter. He's going to even present to you a proposed alternative ordinance that does go further to protect your concerns, but at the same time doesn't cross the line. Accept the deal, El Reno, because if you don't, you're going to lose. And if you think that your people are upset and got a problem with medical marijuana, how are they going to feel about you having to cut a check in the name of the city taxpayers to the plaintiff when you have to pay damages for what you're doing to them? No, folks, it's time these communities straighten up. I'm asking you, El Reno, get a handle on things, all right? Let's move on to our next story after this message. Welcome back, and welcome to Page 2. This is Sooner Politics Weekend Report. I'm David Van Rissakam. Let's talk about the Ethics Board. See this young woman here? Her name's Ashley Kemp. She's the Executive Director of the Oklahoma State Ethics Commission. And she failed. She failed big time. Let me tell you a little bit about her. She got with a Democrat lawmaker from here in Tulsa, okay, Melody Blansett. Blansett just got all worked up about all the dark money in politics. Oh, it's so terrible. Well, we need to make some rules. And you know what they did? Instead of going after the dark money, which is out of state, which they really don't have any power to go after, they're going to make themselves feel better by coming after you and me, the common citizen. Yeah. It doesn't matter that the lobbyists for the big money concerns that are already controlling the state have already got all their lobbyists. Now they want you and me to be controlled by Ashley Kemp here, the young lady in the picture. Ashley's an attorney. She's worked for another agency, and now she's working, she gets to be director of the Ethics Board. I was at the Ethics Commission hearing 2 weeks ago. And she wanted us all to clap for her mother because her mother came to speak. You know who her mother was? Her mother was the one lone voice saying that we have to pass these rules. Because if you don't properly identify yourself, and by that they mean all your financial connections with everybody, if you don't identify yourself, you shouldn't have free speech rights. Yeah, yeah. But we all had to clap and cheer her mama for coming. Oh, that's so wonderful. No, Ashley, I really got problems, and I really have problems with you being the arbiter of what is ethical in the state, because you've gone way beyond your boundaries. Now, Trent England with OCPA and Don Spencer with OK2A, these are all citizen activist organizations that have diligently been following this and diligently appearing at the Capitol. Now keep in mind, they presented this way back in December. They knew that it was, I don't know if it's going to pass, so they tabled it to the next meeting. So they met 2 weeks ago. And you know what? All they could muster up to support Ashley Kemp's proposal was Ashley Kemp's mother. Oh, and Melody Blancet, the leftist Democrat from here in Tulsa. So they decided to punt it a couple weeks further, and they brought it up this last Friday. This last Friday was no different. Folks, Trent England was correct. He mentioned our state founding documents that established the purpose and the mandate and the mission of the Ethics Board. And it is clearly this: to monitor the ethical behavior of our elected officials and our state agencies. All right? Not the private citizens of the state. Ashley, you've lost your way. I don't think you did it accidentally. I think you think that you know better how to control our ethics and how to control our free speech. And I really have a problem. I have a problem with what you're doing, and I want you to know I'm taking note. I really have a problem with what's going on. I hope that our legislature sends a clear message. Now, I have to say, the legislature hasn't always been the good guy in this. Sometimes the legislature is really in it for the incumbent class. And sometimes the Ethics Commission is doing a very important role, all right? This was not their important role. The rules they were passing basically would have made every preacher preaching and pastoring every Sunday in the pulpit would probably have to register as a lobbyist, because inadvertently they would speak on something that would have something to do with some issue of state law or a proposed bill. Keep in mind, there's 2,600 or 2,800 bills that were filed just this month. I don't know what's in all 2,800 of them. Certainly most of our pastors don't. But this is the problem with government getting too big. And a government watchdog is not making things better. They're making it worse. I think the Ethics Board needs to be schooled in what ethics should be, and they should be done by the people of Oklahoma. I hope you're with me. I want to commend a whole range of grassroots groups that showed up. The people I saw there were not the professional political class. The people I saw there were from a diverse number of specific issues that were important to the little guy. Important to the moms and dads, important to the small business, or important to those who believe that the Second Amendment is so fundamental to our retaining our liberty. Now, there are a number of things we need to get fixed, and I don't think that this was a smart move, and I think this effort by Ashley Kemp will not be a good chapter in her resume. And now this from our sponsors, and we'll be back with page 3. Welcome back to Sooner Politics Weekend Report. I'm David Vann. Let's move on to page 3. The Paxton bill is going to undermine patient protections. This is a real concern. Again, 2,800 bills filed at the legislature. Keep in mind, this is the youngest and least experienced legislature we've had since over 100 years. Okay? This is Lonnie Paxton. Lonnie's a rancher, a farmer, eggman from down in Tuttle. He's also been the president of his local chamber of commerce. He's also sat on the board of directors at his local hospital. Healthcare, chamber of commerce, well, they've been friends of Lonnie Paxton. And now he's in office. Now he's writing bills, controlling how the rest of us live. Now, I want to credit Lonnie for being part of the bicameral interim study on medical marijuana, also known as the Joint Commission. Lonnie sat and listened, asked a lot of good questions, and now he showed his hand. Now we're finding out what he's doing. Lonnie is trying to roll back a number of the patient protections that you and I, the voters of Oklahoma, by double-digit margin, we passed State Question 788. One of the things that Lonnie wants to do is say, if you're inhaling your medicine, that means vaporizers, that means tinctures that are put in steamers, that means smokable edibles, which for some people, given their health condition, might be the only way they can get it. It might also be the only effective way to avoid tragedy. Lonnie wants to say that you can't consume of any of that unless you are in your own private residence. No, not even driving down the street, not even sitting in a boat out there in the lake that happens to be situated in your community. Nowhere. If you're outside, even in your property, you're outside and you're inhaling medical cannabis. No, he wants to basically slap you down with a violation. Misdemeanor, I assume. This is a problem. This is a problem especially for my friends of mine like Ray Jennings, who's in advanced throat cancer. Couldn't swallow. Had to be fed through a tube. The only way he could take treatment that would help his chemotherapy to be less nauseous was actually to inhale his cannabis medicine. Or take my friend Cody Barlow. Had flashbacks. He's a veteran. He's got PTSD, serious anxiety disorder. When a person's in a panic attack, I'm telling you, you want them to get their medicine right away. You don't want to wait an hour for some pill to get absorbed through the digestive system. No, there are some times that the safest way to provide medicine is going to be in an inhaled form. So Lonnie wants to make that illegal. Even if you've got your doctor's directive, even if you've got your medical marijuana patient card, even if you're following all of your doctor's advice. Then he wants to do this. He wants to allow employers to fire an employee, not for smoking on the job, not for being impaired, but just for having a medical marijuana card. That's right. If somebody decides, you know, let's get you that card. When you go to the doctor and the doctor gives you a recommendation, you got 30 days to get your license. Otherwise, that recommendation becomes void. So some people are going to get their license even though they haven't decided really to go through with it. Doctor may have given them authorization, but it might be under the condition of, I think you should try that if this doesn't work. Well, situations like that, there's going to be a number of people have cards that don't have any THC in their system. Yeah, Lonnie wants to make it legal for these people, even while they're struggling with their chemotherapy treatment and the nausea involved in it, or the veterans with PTSD who, because they might have another flashback, they might need it And so they have their patient card, so they're legal. Lonnie wants that veteran fired. Lonnie wants that chemotherapy person fired, if that's what their employer wants. And so Lonnie wants to make it legal for their employer to do that. I have a problem with that. Here's the next thing Lonnie wants to do. He wants to remove some of the medical privacy status. Yeah. See, in order to find out whether or not you've got a card, there's got to be a means of finding out. Now, State Question 788 set it up so that your patient privacy would be highly protected. And that's a good thing. But Lonnie's trying to change that. And then he wants to add to the sales tax base. He wants your municipality to get their cut out of the deal. Right now, the law says there will be a 7% tax on retail cannabis purchases. Well, he wants the city to get to tack on their portion, the county to get to tack on their portion, and whatever other portion there might be on there. So he wants to raise taxes on it. God bless you, patients. You're going to pay for that new TIF development down the road, that new shopping mall going in. All right. Then here's the next thing he wants to do. He wants to increase the criminal penalty from $400 back to a year in jail and $1,000 if you don't have your card yet, but you got the medical need. You may be getting treatment or planning to get treatment. If you don't have your card, current law says, you know, if you got a medical condition and you didn't have your card, you got a $400 fine. It's kind of an impetus to tell people, get legal, get your paperwork in order, get it down there, and let's make sure you have a card to go along with that medicine that you're being treated with. No, he wants to go back to $1,000 in a year in jail. That's the problem I have with the Paxton bill. It's SB 1030. Take a look at it. We've written on it in Sooner Politics. And now, here's a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with page 4. Welcome back to page 4. This is David Bann with Sooner Politics. We're glad you're with us for the weekend report. More stupid bills. As I've been mentioning to you, we've got upwards close to 3,000 bills that we're wading through in the legislature. Legislature is going to convene here in about a week and a half. Almost 3,000 bills. Mind you, these 3,000 bills are written by our least experienced legislators. You know what kind of bill I'd like to see? I'd like to see a bill that gets rid of stupid laws that are still on the books. Do you know, there are a bunch of stupid laws in the books. Now, some of them are not enforceable, but they're still there so that a prosecutor or a cop can harass you. Yeah, they can claim probable cause, even though they know that the charges are going to be dropped. Do you know that there is a law in Oklahoma, a felony law, against flying a red flag? Yeah. Yeah, I know. Our first Oklahoma flag was a red flag with a blue star and the number 46 on it. That was our original flag. But according to this law, if you're flying a red flag and there's evidence that you support anything that a prosecutor or a cop might consider anarchy or disloyalty to any of the laws of the state, think of it. Is there a law in Oklahoma or in our nation that you have a problem with? Is there a Supreme Court precedence you have a problem with? Okay, if you don't have a problem with something in our law, you're not thinking. So if you are known, I mean even as simple as a bumper sticker says, "Don't tread on me." Or if you're a libertarian, which a lot of people say, well, libertarian is the equivalent of anarchy. And some libertarians will say that they actually are anarchists. But it's worthy of not just a felony, a 10-year prison sentence for flying a red flag with any other evidence of disloyalty to our laws or our state or a belief in some form of anarchy or support for some, let's say, Ed Snowden or Julian Assange of WikiLeaks or, you know, anybody who our government considers an enemy. You support them, you're an anarchist. You're flying a red flag, 10 years. That's just one example of the stupid laws in our state. Keep in mind, motor vehicle says you're hauling a load of lumber that sticks out a foot and a half from your back tailgate. You have to fly a red flag. Yeah, gotta fly a red flag, but it's against the law to fly a red flag. Go figure. This is our legislature making up new laws, not cleaning up the old ones. I'll go through a few others for you. Do you know that it is against the law? Now, it's a misdemeanor, mind you, against the law to publicly question a woman's chastity and virtue. Yeah. I wanted to say it another way, but I'm not going to, okay? There are so many laws. Oh, my goodness. I started a blog called It's Still the Law in Oklahoma. What I'm saying, legislators, I put out a challenge to you. I'm looking for the first legislature to say, this session, I will use my limited privilege to write bills, to do nothing but write bills that call for removing laws from our books. That's the legislator that I want to get behind. That's the legislature I'm going to be the primary cheerleader for. I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see us get rid of stupid things like this 10-year prison sentence for flying a red flag. Now, I've got to say, Supreme Court of the United States struck down all these flag laws as a violation of free speech, as they should. And yes, free expression is part of free speech. So, at the time, I had a problem with our Supreme Court making that decision, because at the time, I considered my patriotic duty to support making it a crime for anybody to burn the American flag. Well, I've grown up some since then, and I've understood that it is our duty to challenge our government when our government needs to be challenged. Proud American, proud to be in America, not proud of everything our government does. Proud of my country, not always proud of my government. You know what I mean? All right, let's take a break for a message, and then we'll be back with page 5. Welcome back to Sooner Politics Weekend Report. I'm David Vann, and this is page 5. We're talking about nobility in our youth. You see this young man? Yeah, he was probably one of the most vilified people in America this time last week. He's just a youth, teenager, from Covington, Kentucky. Little suburb just across the Ohio River from Cincinnati. I've stayed in Covington. Nice little town. I like it there. Cincinnati is a very predominantly Catholic community, as is Covington, the suburb, as I said. Nick here is a Catholic, young man, Roman Catholic, attends a Catholic school, Covington Catholic. Covington did this year, as has been their tradition for several years, they spent last weekend in Washington, D.C. They're part of the March for Life, a pro-life big gathering. Now, he was part of that event, and then later in the day, the kids were allowed to visit some of the monuments on the Capitol. They were just told, 5:30, get it in front of the Lincoln Memorial. That's where we're gathering, and our buses will pick us up then. Kids were actually really well behaved. But at the same time, last weekend, there was another organization meeting there, another group, indigenous peoples. American Indians were there. Well, then there were also the professional class of rabble-rousers, the Black Hebrew Israelites. Let me tell you, the Black Hebrew Israelites were causing all kinds of problems for everybody. They don't have hardly a nice thing to say about anyone. If you saw the extended video, you'd know what I mean. And finally, some of the tribal members, these Indian tribes, you know, finally was calling these Black Hebrews, you know, hey, would you lay off? You know, go after those white kids over there. And what do you know? The Black Hebrews decided, yeah, let's do it. And of course, they saw Nick and a couple of his buddies wearing the red hats. Now, mind you, they were not in the March for Life at the time, okay? They were on their own time. Nick was wearing a simple red hat with a patriotic message. It said, make America great again. I know, but that means you support Trump. We can't have that. No. So you know what they were doing? They got all over Nick. And eventually, this very opportunistic professional protester, Mr. Russell, decided he was going to get in the middle of it. Now, for a little while, you know, the Indian tribes were having a little break from the onslaught of verbal just trash coming out of the mouths of the Black Hebrews. But then all of a sudden, you know, it's kind of nice being in the middle of the attention and all the cameras and the crowds, you know. So Mr. Russell decides he's going to come in there. And he walks kind of slowly and deliberately right in. He walks right up to Nick Sandman. And he pulls out his drum, puts it right up by Nick's ear, and he starts beating loudly on his drum. And he starts doing something that, you know, I assume would be some kind of a cultural traditional thing to him. But Nick's just standing there. You know, he's not moving. He doesn't need to move. He's just standing there. I mean, that guy came to him. He wasn't blocking Mr. Russell. He just stood there, unfazed. Nick showed a poise that was incredible. Nick did not return the insults. None of the kids from Covington returned the insults of the Black Hebrews, who were really the bad guy in this thing. So you know what? Our leftist media decided to take certain clips that would make Nick look like the most hostile, terrible person. And yeah, he's got that smirk on his face. Nick has had so many death threats. Nick's family has been barraged. The school Nick goes to didn't even stand by Nick. The diocese that he's been a parishioner of criticized him, disavowed his behavior. Now, a number of people have recanted what they said when the full message got out. But what I want to talk about, and I want to commend, and I have commended, some of those journalists who said I was wrong. I blew it. I can't believe I allowed myself to be caught up in the hysteria and frenzy of all this. Nick gives me hope for a next generation. They might be better than my own generation. I'm going to be honest with you. And it isn't just a young man from Kentucky. We have young people like Nick right here in Oklahoma. A few years ago, I found a young blogger who was writing some good blogs on a liberty message. His name was Alex Allen. One of his blogs, he wasn't too sure of. I read it early one morning. And in fact, it was the day I was meeting with several presidential candidates in Oklahoma City. And I saw it, and I wanted to share it. And then I went back, and it was taken down. Nick had second thoughts. And, well, I had a cached copy of it. So I was able to reclaim it and post it on my site. I gave Nick credit for it. This thing went viral. I mean, everybody. I'm at this big convention, the SRLC, and everybody's asking me, oh, who's this Nick? This thing's amazing. And so I finally get a hold of Nick that afternoon. I said, Nick, we've got a big banquet here tonight, the gala. A lot of people want to meet you. Can you be here? Would you be my guest? He said, I can't. I said, what's going on? He said, man, I got all this company in town. I said, well, do you really have to be there? He said, well, they're here because it's my high school graduation tonight. Yeah. When I told people there, that blog was written by a high school kid, they're blown away. This last year, working the governor's campaign, I ran into a young man from Blackwell, Jordan Green. Jordan's now part of the staff there at the Blackwell newspaper. Jordan writes great stuff. His maturity beyond his years. There are a lot of great youth. You may know some of them. If you do, don't diminish them or look down upon them because they're young. You can learn something from them. Another great blogger that I've been privileged to know is actually from my home state, a transplant here. That's Ellie Mae. I hope you get a chance to see more of her video works. There are a lot of very intelligent, very wise young people. And it's time we invest in them. And it's time that we saw the value in what they can contribute. I want to thank Nick Sandman for what example he set for us this last weekend and beyond. And I want to encourage you to find the young people who are like Nick, who you can invest in, who you can encourage, and who you can help have a voice for a better Oklahoma tomorrow. I'm David Vann of Sooner Politics. It's been great to have you with me this weekend. We'll see you next weekend on SoonerPolitics.org's Weekend Report.